Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, May 18th, 2026. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Cassidy Palmer, and Zach Horwitz. Indiana only had pride to play for in the final series of the weekend, and they came out on top, beating Illinois 2-1. The Thursday opener was Tony Newbeck's 7th quality start in 10 conference outings. An impressive feat for the Hoosier ace. Hogan Denny went 3-for-3, and freshman Owen Tanuver hit a 3-run bomb as the Hoosiers cruised to a commanding 10-4 win. Friday saw the Hoosiers fall behind and then tie the game late with 4 runs in the 9th, including a solo shot by Will Moore, and then facing the final out, a 3-run blast to tie the game by Hogan Denny. The Hoosiers were unable to hold on and lost in the 10th, 9-7. The Saturday finale showed the Hoosiers' offensive fight by wearing down a very talented freshman arm and putting up a 6 spot in the 4th inning, thanks in part to a grand slam off the bat of freshman outfielder Cal Gates. Brayton Thomas labored through 4 scoreless frames and then turned the game over to senior Pete Haas, who turned in an efficient gem, putting up 4 scoreless of his own before freshman Kellen English slammed the door. Indiana climbed out of the cellar to finish above Northwestern by 1 game at 9-12 in the Big Ten in Big Ten play. The Hoosiers finished 23-31 overall. So we'll start with Cass. Do you have any statistical nuggets for us in this final week?
Yeah, thank you, Carl. So I wanted to this week between it being the end of the season paired with coming back from some work travel, I wanted to keep it fairly basic here. And so I did some comparison of IU this year to IU last year. And I guess technically the opponents last year to the opponents this year. Both sides of things. And I did look at this at a, either things like batting averages at a, an at-bat kind of thing, but for other stuff looked at per game average. So it did account for the slight difference in total number of games. I think it was just 2 games different. And there were some moderately surprising, that not surprising in this game, in the scheme of things, but it wasn't always necessarily about where IU was better or worse versus last year, but where its opponents were also different from last year. And some of it, is it worse pitching or is it better batting? Yeah. On the opponent side, it can be hard to tease that out at just a quick glance. Maybe I'll dive into that at some point, but starting with a basic with batting average, there really wasn't much of a difference between IU last year to this year or IU's opponents last year to this year. IU's batting average was a little bit worse than last year, and IU's opponents hit a little bit better than last year, but not what I'd call significant. IU also didn't give up significantly more runs than last year. The issue was the offense did score 2.5 runs fewer game while keeping the other side about the same. That, considering that batting average really didn't change meaningfully, the part where that came into play a little bit was those walks. IU drew more than 1 walk fewer per game this year compared to last year. And that's something we noticed periodically. Opponents, and while this doesn't seem like a lot, had about half a walk per game more this year compared to last year. And when you pair that with just a little bit better hitting, that can get away from you surprisingly quickly. And on the fielding end of things, errors were about a wash for both IU and opponents between the 2 years. So that really wasn't a major contributor across the course of the season. So that was something I did like to see. Looking at those strikeouts, IU actually struck out fewer times per game on average compared to last year. Not by a ton, but by a little bit. They cut down on those strikeouts just slightly. But IU did strike out more batters on the pitching side of things, even though their ERA was almost a full point higher compared to last year. So there are some things that very much stood out on the offensive side as well, kind of going with that down in the number of runs without seeing a huge drop off in the batting average. The big thing there was over one extra base drop off per game. With a big chunk of that, actually the biggest chunk of that being home runs. IU was just above one home run per game when they had been closer to two last season. So that really did take a hit. While not every team has to be built for power, that can be a little bit of a make or break point for a team. And I think that really did not help IU at all this year. So those were some of the things that stood out. There were some weird bits of earned runs went up that high when opponents were actually getting fewer hits per game compared to last year. Like that weird stuff happens. It's baseball. That's usually the reality of it. Baseball is weird. But it also gives some concrete areas for improvement for next year. And that's what we're really gonna be looking to see.
Well, and a couple, one point I will make, Cass, is I was tracking some of this up in the middle of the season. And a couple points I will make because of these numbers are significantly different than what I was seeing mid-season. The
Oh,
batting
yeah.
average was way less.
Yes, it was.
So they've recovered. In fact, I would say they hit better second half of the season
Yes.
this year than they did last year.
Yes.
So that's one thing. For batting average, I think slug was it was worse than that. It was like half a
Oh,
home run a game at
yeah.
that point. The IU pitcher striking guys out was massively down. And there was one other point I was going to make in that I don't remember, but yeah, I think a lot of those numbers shifted, where basically you're saying most of this thing came to the kind of found some level at the end of the season.
And I will say with some of those things, there can be it's weird to talk about seasonality over the course of a baseball season, but things like home runs, depending where you're playing for the early part of the season, it can be significantly harder to hit those home runs when it's cooler, when it's cooler weather.
Yeah, I just don't think it was year over year, it was that big a difference. I really think this team just wasn't slugging.
Right. I think that was the bigger issue. I'm just saying, like, there can be some amount of seasonality with some of this as a baseline. And so this year was beyond that in most category. It was beyond the, like, whether it's the cold weather slowing down home runs a bit or early season natural field play kicking up those errors a little bit. We talk about that, I think, every year. So
Well, there was that
some of
weird,
that
like,
is expected.
3 week period when Devin Taylor was one home run away from breaking the record
Yeah.
that he hit nothing but singles for 3 weeks.
Singles.
And
Just
he had a ton of
ton of them.
them.
Absolutely.
Plus, no Corbin Dickerson and Devin Taylor are obviously going to affect the home run numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
And
And then, I mean, they do say most people end up playing to the back of the baseball card, right? So in this case, it happened. We started off slow in the power numbers. Carl mentioned it, but it all kind of came to the end where the numbers were what they were supposed to be. I think it just, well, again, thanks, Cass, for all your hard work looking up the numbers. I'm not saying like it wouldn't happen if you didn't look it up. I'm still very grateful. But it did, in the end, just kind of meet where it was supposed to.
Water
But
fountain level.
but Corbin and Devin, I mean, they were hot right from the start last year.
Well,
Well,
this
and
year, yeah, you have two guys that are in double digit home runs, which is Denny and Hanley with 14 each. The next is Braden Ricketts who had nine. If you added maybe Devin Taylor or Corbin Dickerson from last year onto this team, you get a bunch of more runs. That's for sure. They're about a player, maybe two players away from being like a legitimate offense in the sport this year.
Well, just think of if you can get a full year of Owen Tanuver. So
That
Yeah.
sound of
And
his bat boy, I'm telling
oh, yeah.
you. Thursday night when he hit the bomb. I don't know, man. There's something about his bat. It just sounds different,
Yeah. I
when
had to
he
try so
cracks
hard
one,
to,
you know it.
oh, yeah. Had to try so hard not to cheer on the plane over, I think we would have been like over Tennessee at that point.
And we were hearing in the crowd before the game that his grandfather was there from like Norway. And
Oh,
it was
that's
the
cool.
first time he'd ever seen him play in person was that night.
That's awesome.
Isn't that wild?
I like to hear that.
Then he cracks one, 3-run bomb.
Yes.
That was cool.
Yes. Yep. But so Feeney, we've come to the last week, and every single one of these is still every single one of the red belts is still up for at least up for a tie. So who you got this week for the red belts?
It's funny, I was talking to Carl before you guys jumped on, and this is the first time ever that we've done this, and it's the last podcast of the season, to say the last red
Yeah.
belt, right? Because we don't give them out in the Big Ten tourney. We don't give them out in the NCAA tourney. So this is the first time since we've been doing this that the last podcast of the season will be the last red belt given out. And, it just shows you, like, sports fans are on schedules, right? I know I am. Like, just growing up, like Labor Day meant college football started, then NFL started a week later, and then the hockey play, you can go along. And this season has just not been like Indiana football lasted like 2 months longer. You know what I'm saying? Usually it ends the day after Thanksgiving. But then here, the baseball season ended way before. So it's funky. Like, and even normally with us, we're like all into IU baseball in January, right? We're like prepping things and look. I don't think we talked about it at all.
No.
I didn't even start the countdown until it was like 20 days. And it was all because of Sig. And it was all because of that football team making that a magical run. So it's just, you're just so used to things, right, on a sports schedule. And this year has definitely not been what we've been used to. Hopefully, we get it back on track for baseball next year. But I'll take a long one for football again. No complaints. For the Red Belts, offensively, there were several that you could mention, right? We talked about Tanuver's home run with grandfather in the house, a first career home run with a grand slam from the Bedford legend, Cal Gates. But as far as moments, and it's kind of like emblematic of the season, right? We make this crazy comeback. We hit a 3-run home run on the 27th out, right? We're winning that game. No, we're going to blow it later. The trapdoor is going to fall out again. But I am going to give it to Hogan Denny for that home run because, I mean, we haven't had a walk off the whole year. Carl pointed out to me, what was that, a couple of weeks ago? And I thought tonight's the night. Like, we're going to do it. Even though we were down four, I literally wrote it down on the Twitter thing because I really was like, you know what? Let it be tonight. And that's the one, right? When you've got to stop something crazy, it's got to be something crazy to do it, right? Like the Red Sox, right? They were down 3-0 to break the curse. They had to come back. The Cubs, down 3-1 in a World Series. They had to come back. The rain delayed the whole thing. So I'm like, okay, This will be the first walk-off. Down four in the ninth. And then we were right there. But Hogan Denny hits the bomb, ties the game. I think Tyrod Taylor might have been watching because then he did the same exact thing against the Yankees a couple days later, which was beautiful. Three-run home run, 27th out, tied the game. But we went on to win that game, the Mets. So that was good. Defensively, we're going to double up. Tony Butler Award, Hogan Denny. Okay? The man plays third base like Brooks Robinson. And it's Brooks Robinson's birthday today, too, by the way. So it's fitting. Everything. I was pointing out the car. Look, he knows how to where to go for the cutoff throws. And he did. It was wild. Like, yeah, you could watch him get a ground ball and make him throw. He was going in on the bunts. He was charging balls. I'm like, who is this guy? He was a Josh Pine-esque. I couldn't believe it. But even on the stuff you wouldn't notice, maybe unless you're at the game because they're not showing it on TV. But seriously, he was like pre-pitch. He was on the balls of his feet, you know, every pitch doing the dance that all the infielders do. And in the right place for cutoff throws. Hogan Denny can do it all. You know, I wish we would have let him pitch in the ninth Saturday, but they didn't want to let him. So Hogan Denny gets our Tony Butler Award. And that leaves us just the final red belt of the season. And I know, Carl, we didn't get a walk-off. We didn't get a walk-off, you know, win this year. But that walk-off of Pete Haas off the mound, sitting there, for those who were there, I don't know how much they showed of it on TV. But Pete Haas comes in on senior day, throws 4 2/3. I wrote it down here. At one point, he got 11 outs on 33 pitches. And coach came out to get him. And you can tell he's one of the guys because all the infielders came out there patting him on the back. Everybody was just, I mean, the kid was crying. I shouldn't call him a kid. The young man was crying coming off the mound. And we didn't get a walk-off win, but seeing Pete Haas walk off the mound after such a great performance, ending his career at IU, to me, that was special. And he's going to get the final red belt of the season. He gets the Joey Donato Award. I know Cass is going to let us know the season totals before we get it over to Carl for the Big Ten update.
Yep. And Feeney, you managed to avoid any ties this year.
I didn't even know, not on purpose.
Yep. And so on the pitching side with the Joey Donato red belt, we've got Gavin Siebold at four of them, followed by Newbeck at three. On the offensive side of things, we had the I guess in a way this broke the tie, but there was a decent chance of that happening anyway. Hogan Denny gets the Alex Dickerson red belt with three of those, and then a slew of guys with two after him. On the defensive side of things, it goes to Caleb Koskie with three of them, followed by Denny and Decker, each with two. And somehow, some way, two different pitchers in the Tony Butler Red Belt list this year.
Yes, I just call it how I see it.
Yep.
And I can picture both of those plays still right now. And
Yep.
Rivera's was months ago. Okay. Newbeck's
Yes.
was just at Wrigley, right? So it wasn't
Yeah.
that long ago. But
Yeah.
those are amazing plays. No, was it at Wrigley or was it at the BART when the drop third strike? That might have been at the BART. But I
That
can
was the
picture
BART.
both. Yeah, it was
That
at
was
the
at the
BART.
BART.
Yeah,
Yeah.
at the BART. The ball hit the bat, I think, too. I don't know. It was
Was
weird.
Rivera's at North Carolina? Was that the first week?
I
I'm trying
thought
to
it was
remember.
Oregon, no?
It was
I can picture
week
him jumping
two.
off that mound, making those throws, and it
Oh.
was like 2 in 1 inning.
Yeah, it
It
was
was
week
wild.
two. That was week two. Okay.
Week two. So it
So
was in
that
that
was so, so
tournament
I don't
game.
know. Yeah, I can't remember which of the specific
He
teams it
made
faced,
two
but
amazing PFPs coming off the mound. It was really good. Really
Yep.
good.
I gotta say,
They earned
my Joey Donato is going to Tony Newbeck because
it.
obviously this team didn't win that many games this year. If Tony Newbeck didn't turn out to what he was, this team, or also I guess if Gavin Siebold won it, a lot of the times you wouldn't get to Siebold if Newbeck
Yeah.
didn't do his job.
Yeah.
So mine
It's a
goes
good
to
point.
Tony Newbeck.
Good
He made
point.
the first game of the series was always winnable because of Tony Newbeck. Gavin Siebold was fantastic in the bullpen. I think he was kind of the only guy that could go out there and you feel safe and secure when the guy's on the mound. But you don't get to him if it's not for Tony. So that's my pitching award.
Yeah, because the red belts, though, it's that whole collection of specific weeks, and it can sometimes produce a weird result because of, yeah, like defensively, if you happen to, you make three great plays in 3 different weeks, you can get that award, but someone else may get a gold glove because they just didn't happen to make an error all year. So.
But I think also, Zach, to your point, which I definitely agree with, without Newbeck, we don't get so many Super Bowl moments. I think we just got so used to Tony doing that. Well, I should say I give him out. I got so used to Tony doing that that it was like, okay, that's just Tony being Tony, and it wasn't even as accept. Like, he was so good that we just kind of expected it, right? You expected a quality start. You expected it. So then, like, somebody else did something exceptional where maybe he was so above his baseline, and then they got that person the red belt.
Yeah,
I think that
totally
was part of it
consistent.
too.
The guy would go out there and throw strikes every time. I would never sit there and worry that the guy's going to walk six batters in a game and have to be pulled in the second inning. Like
That's
that,
never.
just
Never.
yeah. No, honestly, a special pitcher from the left side too. You don't
Yeah.
really get too much of that. So,
And coming
yeah.
off what he came off of with injuries.
And then
And
pitched
as
for
a young
700
kid,
games. Yeah.
with all that expectation going to the SEC, and then it gets all get taken away. And yeah. I mean, but Carl said it too. It's a week by week award that can make you stand out. But I think it's also we came accustomed to Tony's excellence, and it just it put the bar higher for him. So Carl's going to let us know about the Big Ten, the Pick'em, and also don't forget the CRPI.
So for the standings, I do have a little bit of a mea culpa. If you have been following the standings we have on our website, I say it's a mea culpa. It's also going to be an accusation because the tiebreaker rules have been pretty consistent for, I think, 3 years at least. The Big Ten, they may have changed the wording, but the actual rules were very consistent. In the off season, they made a change. And when I wrote this app to do it automatically because I was tired of calculating the tiebreakers every week manually, I went to the site and I looked up and I was like, oh, not only do I know these have got to be right because they're different and they include a new step. Sometime between then, which was like the first week of January, and last week, they made another change to the tiebreaker rules and then made no announcement of this to the fans. I'm sure the teams knew about it because otherwise Minnesota would be screaming bloody murder because they got the change in tiebreaker rule cost them a trip to Omaha. Now, I don't disagree with the change. I think it's actually a very good change. And the change is that basically they threw out the whole record versus common opponents thing. And now it is record versus teams in positions 1 through 8 in the conference. That is essentially the third tiebreaker. Well, the tiebreaker right before RPI is this. So overall, I am the changes that were made were good. Just tell us, please, Big Ten baseball, tell. There are actual fans of Big Ten baseball. Let us know what's going on.
Come on,
They
Carl.
did.
Nobody hates baseball like the Big Ten. Come on.
No. I mean, they didn't even kill the link because I had the link posted to the tiebreaker rules that were never actually used. That link is still active today. They just put up another PDF and linked to the other PDF, but they didn't take down the old one.
Come on, Carl. There's been years we've had major Sunday and Saturday conference baseball games going on. And they're showing the Iowa Spring game from 1996 on the Big Ten. Nobody hates Big Ten baseball more than the Big Ten. So we know this. But yeah, they screwed you. And they screwed us because usually you always have it right. And you still had it right because it's their fault.
But yeah, so that was the big thing, was that it actually impacted the 12 and 13 slot, because with the new rules with record versus teams 1 through 8, Michigan State back themselves into a tournament slot. Minnesota did not. Now, the other big changes in the standings were that Ohio State passed Michigan in the standings to finish in sixth place over Michigan in seventh. Despite a really poor weekend, Purdue settled into fifth place. Oregon, with their series win over USC, finished in third. One and two is solidly UCLA and Nebraska. There's no contest there. IU did finish a full game ahead of Northwestern. By the tiebreaker rules, Indiana did finish 16th overall because they were tied with Maryland and Penn State, but they had lost a series to Maryland, and Maryland had won a series against Penn State, so that's why they were 14th. But IU's record against 1 through 8 was 0-12. IU got swept in all four of those series. So I'm assuming Penn State won one game between 1 and 8, and that was enough to get them into 15th place. So IU finishes 9-21 in the Big Ten with an RPI rank of 119 and a position of 16th. I did also have the CRPI, which is the it's using the RPI formula, but only applying it to Big Ten conference games. Ohio State passed Michigan. Ohio State is fifth in the CRPI. So if you have a team that you're thinking might make some noise, and by noise I don't mean win the tournament, but I would not be shocked to see Ohio State playing baseball on playing baseball on Saturday. They'll get killed, but they may be playing baseball still on Saturday. That's one I would keep an eye out for. They're playing really good ball right now. Iowa passed Purdue in the CRPI by winning that series. IU has actually been in the cellar of the CRPI for like a month. The win over the series win over Illinois actually got IU barely out of the out of it. Actually, it's only what 0.03 difference over Northwestern. Barely past Northwestern for the CRPI. Okay, so those are our conference pieces, and now we will move on to the pick'em. And we have a pick'em champion. Congratulations, Cass. Cass is
Thank you.
our pick'em champ. So
It was tight.
it was a very, very interesting last week. So, and we actually had a big diversity of picks. That was the part that was actually really cool, as opposed to what was it, 3 weeks ago, all four of us picked the same. That was really boring. But I mean, but overall, I mean, Cass 62-13. I mean, that's just nuts. I mean, you compare it to last year. And I made a point because, I'm just in case I haven't, talked to Bowen and Drew. I mean, youngsters, they have nothing to be ashamed of because Drew finished sixth in our group. But he at 47-28, he would have been third place last year with that rate. It's just the rates we were picking. I
He
did
works a
manage.
great dugout, Carl. He works a great dugout,
He
also.
does do
He does.
that, yes. And he
That
got
was
to do it at
awesome.
Wrigley
Yeah,
Field,
Wrigley.
which was really cool.
Oh, that's amazing. What a fun job. Nice job by the team and the staff to let him do that for the amount of time they have. Even on the road. I mean, Wrigley obviously is going to, but he was in other
North
stadiums.
Carolina. He was
North
in North
Carolina. North
Carolina.
Carolina. And I feel like there's been a few other ones.
I finished in second at 16-15. I managed to pass Zach. We know Zach made his shot here to try to win it. So he went with some bold picks that just did not pay off. Purdue over Iowa. I think We weren't as impressed with Purdue.
It was a
I just
fine
don't trust them.
trade-off. They're
Right.
outside the bubble now, so
Yeah.
I'll
Well,
sacrifice one of my picks for that, I guess.
this is the I think for, it's like I was, I was gung-ho on Purdue most of the year. And this is the thing that's so sad is that when did I lose faith in Purdue was when they swept IU.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't Purdue beating IU. Now, granted, I will grant this, it's a kind of a return of the favor from 2 years ago when Purdue decided that they were going to make sure IU got into the NCAA tournament by coughing up that series. And it was a gift. But when you give a gift and then somebody 2 years later comes back and gives that gift back to you, your responsibility is to not look that gift horse in the mouth and get swept the next weekend. Purdue, what are you doing? And it's like, we're not even asking that you like win the series, but don't get swept. Now,
They
as
were
far as the
literally going to the NCAA tournament if they probably won one of those.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Now, Michigan, I that yeah, we all picked Michigan to win, and we all,
We're wrong.
were wrong. And but I mean, it's just to get beat by Ohio State, get swept by Ohio State at home when you basically have a position locked. I mean,
And they're
it's
definitely out too now, right?
no, actually, D1 still has Michigan in,
But Purdue
but
out.
has yeah, Michigan's in and Purdue's
So we're down
out.
to five bids.
Right, we're down to five bids. Now the thing is, if there's three or four stolen bids, Michigan's probably out. And not just that, but Michigan's going to have to play well in Omaha. If Michigan goes two in a queue, I think they're done. They're toast. I don't
To
know what.
Trace's credit, we always played well in those tournaments. So.
Yeah.
And we haven't
So
played too well since he left. No offense to the others.
23 wasn't.
Well,
Sorry,
we were up 2-0, and then
24.
we were up
24 was
2-0, and
20.
we lost twice in
It was
Nebraska
20.
and blew the whole thing.
That was 24.
Yeah.
Not 23. Yeah, 24 is the 1 year we played relatively well.
The one where we beat Maryland as the eight.
That was 22. Yeah, that was actually good. That
My
you're right.
favorite one
Yeah.
since Tracy left, I gotta
Yep.
say.
That was a fun one. And I was there for that one. That was fun.
Honestly, that was my favorite one. The way the guys battled, I can't remember his name, but we had a starter come out like through like eight innings. We barely knew who he was. Remember the guy? He was terrible at Clemson, though. We didn't know who he was, but remember he was terrible at Clemson? And he throws a gem in the Big Ten tournament. I said, "Whoa."
Well, he was doing that was why have I forgotten his name?
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but
The Wright
he was
State
like
transfer.
unbatted
Yeah. He had been pretty good for a month or so up to that point. It took him a while to think.
that good, though. Not that good.
No, not that good. No. I think it's the last complete game we've had. So
That was amazing. And then Ty doing his thing, right?
and
The Big Ten's
Jack
better than
Perkins
Utah.
was
Oh.
very good. Because they held off on Jack Perkins because they didn't think he was a good matchup for Maryland. But then when they had to play Maryland the second time, they had no choice but to use Jack Perkins, and he was
What are you
awesome.
gonna do? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we went to extras the first time with him. Isn't that what it was? We went to extras and lost, then we beat him in nine.
Yeah. They both games went to extras.
Oh, both. Okay.
Right. Both games went to extras, lost the first one,
They all
won the
mixed
second
together.
one.
I just know that that
Yeah.
was a very fun tournament.
No, they were both extra inning games, but at that point, they had used so much pitching that didn't have anything for Rutgers. So,
Yeah, amazing. At 1 o'clock in the morning, we didn't have enough on. Zach, we had to start that game at 1 a.m. our time. It was
That
early.
wasn't any nicer at midnight local.
Just saying, all these games this week that are slated for 9 p.m. or 9:30, they're never, never starting on that time.
No. Because I'm sorry, there's going to be pitching changes in the middle of innings. There's going to be an extra inning game every day. And it's going to rain at some point. So all of
If
those
not
things. Yeah.
multiple points.
Right. If not more than one day.
Yeah. Well, they said that 22, the they didn't actually start the tournament. They weren't supposed to start the tournament until Wednesday. and it rained for 36 hours. So the tournament did not start till Thursday, and that's what basically necessitated. And the thing is, if IU did for some reason have enough pitching and had won that game, there would have had to have been three games on Sunday. IU would have had to play after ending a game at 4 in the morning. They would have had to come back and play again at 10.
No, we would have to play at 10.
Yes.
I thought
Well,
they would have played later.
no, that you can't. You have to have the you have to have they have to turn in the automatic bid by a certain time. So they would
All
have
right.
forced the other team to have like started at 7 in the morning. They
No,
wouldn't
you're
have
right.
closed the stadium. They would have start. They would have
Right.
had
And
them.
if you don't hand the bid in, you don't get it. That's
Yeah.
why.
And there was a real, I mean, there was a real chance all along for, I mean, yeah, because Rutgers didn't get, Rutgers was in the final and lost in the final, and they needed to win that to get in. So as it turns
That
out,
game
they
started at
didn't think
1 o'clock
that was
in
the
the morning.
case. Yeah.
1 a.m. our time, but
It was
Zach, it was over by
11:30.
about
It was
1:20.
11:30 local, but yeah.
Yeah, but it was over in 25 minutes, bro.
Yes,
What
it was. It was.
was it, 6-0 in the first?
Yeah,
Something crazy.
it was non-competitive pitching. Okay, so Chris, boy, we keep looking at a certain number that keeps, I know we're still a few years away, but that 500 number is starting to look pretty
Oh, I mean, I love it. I
visible.
love it.
Yeah.
I'm saying, and it's funny. And obviously, Carl's talking about Kyle Schwarber as we're talking about our alumni. And when I first got out here, I moved out here in 2014. So in January, so my first season was the last season of Schwarber, and I would tell my guys back in New York, like, "Yo, this dude is a little wild, like with the home runs." I also was talking up Sam Travis a bunch too. So I guess I'll take a hit on that because he didn't become a great pro, but. Because Travis, people who don't know, Sam Travis would be smacking line drives all over the place, tons of hits, but Schwarber had the power. And just the way he had like the strut, he would walk out of the dugout and come into the batter's box, and he'd be playing the Cincinnati Reds hat rap song. I don't really know what it was, but man, it was cool because he's a Reds fan. And just he just had a swagger to him. And so I was telling my guy, and then Schwarber becomes who he becomes. So my New York guys are like, it's kind of like knowing a band in their garage days. Like, and then they make it big, and now they're selling out like giant stadium, And so all these guys know Schwarber. And what was even wilder, 2015, we play Schwarber in the playoffs, Mets, Cubs. Schwarber hits two bombs at Citi Field, one off DeGrom and one off Harvey. So. But I mean, we swept them, but Schwarber still hit the home runs. So it was just wild. So, like, you got like some random people in New York that know about Kyle Schwarber in the garage days. I just think it's funny. But yeah, he's heading to 500 home runs. Something I had pointed out for the update, he's the first Philly, not the first, but the quickest Philly to 20 home runs in a season. And as much as I don't like Philly, they've had some real sluggers, right? So you're talking about Ryan Howard, Mike Schmidt. Chase Utley was the one he passed. He was the quickest. Anything we could take away from Chase Utley is a win for me anyway, after what he did to Tejada. I know, Carl, you weren't about that business, but listen, that was dirty. I don't care what he says. And that's why we won in game five, because Utley was dirty. But either way, so Schwarber's the quickest ever to 20 homers as a Philly. Some other people to hit home runs this week, Grant Richardson, Carter Matheson, Devin Taylor. So some familiar names that we all know. We also had a Hoosier versus Hoosier matchup, which was Reese Sharp. If you remember Reese, for those who've been around a bit, I really liked Reese. He used to come in like 2 outs in the seventh and just finish the game. And he was a stud closer. I was surprised he didn't move through quicker, but he had some injuries. He's battling back now in the Baltimore organization. He battled Grant Richardson. It was like an 8-pitch at bat. He struck him out in a full count. I know Grant did not like that because Grant's got a little moxie to him. And I think Grant would get mad losing a game of checkers, honestly, from what I remember about him. So I'm sure he was not happy Reese Smirk struck him out. And then obviously I'm getting a lot of this updates and stuff like that from David Welch, who we've had on our podcast before. He does a lot of alumni work. And as the season ends, I just want to make sure I'm going to shoot out his Twitter account to you guys again. It's at DCWELCH_24. I know he has some trips plan to go watch some alumni play throughout the minors and stuff like that. He's more of like a minor league follower. You know what I mean? He doesn't, maybe he might, obviously he's in Atlanta. If somebody showed up in Atlanta, he'd go. Like he plans to, like he just visited a place where he was able to see Gabe Bierman pitch, which was cool. He was able to speak to Gabe before a game. So David does a great job with stuff like that. I do want to give credit because this is some wild stats that Devin Taylor's putting out there. So I screenshotted the tweet, and obviously I'm not like Cass. Believe me, I did not look all this up. So I do want to give credit to the tweet. Jesse Goldberg Strasler, he's a beat reporter for the Lansing Lugnuts. Okay, he wrote an article and he talked about like why is Devin Taylor still in this league? Like let's promote this guy. And so he writes down, he put together just his last six games. This is Devin. 9 for 21, 8 runs scored, 4 doubles, 7 RBIs, 6 walks, a 419 average, a 556 OBP, and a 1.175 OPS. So all that has happened since we recorded last for Devin. So I would think he's getting a promotion pretty soon. And Jesse Goldberg Strassler, thanks for helping me out here with the IUBase.com podcast update. I'm sure he's listening. So that's pretty much our alumni update. Real quick, I know it didn't go the way the season wanted to, but follow, you know, if you're following along with us, we obviously keep track of the alumni and stuff that goes on throughout the rest of the Major League Baseball season and minor league baseball season. And, you know, these are players that were ours. You know what I'm saying? These are guys we watched at the BART and on the road and continue to follow them. I understand maybe you take a little break. You know, I've been there. Like we talked last week, I didn't think I was going to watch baseball again, right? After that loss or whatever to the Cardinals. But you take a little break, I get it. And then maybe you come back, you start following a little bit of the alumni. And before you know it, we'll be at football again.
All right. Well, we have come to the end of the season. In the post game on Friday, Coach Mercer talked a bit about how early hitting woes stressed the pitching to the point where the depth in the pitching was gone late in the season. So I guess I just kind of want us to reflect on that and discuss what our thoughts are regarding, you know, how that. I think at one point I pointed out that early in the season, the first 20 games or so, half of them had the pitchers had held the team to 4 runs or less. And we saw a lot less of that, you know, in the last 20 games or so. So what do we think that's attributed to? Does coach's explanation of that make sense?
I think that they did kind of put themselves in a hole early on where they were losing games in the non-conference, that you kind of use the guys that are reliable. You saw that a bunch. I mean, I would say Tony Newbeck was probably the only starter that was reliable all season long. Gavin Siebold was the one bullpen guy that was reliable. I think we all of us enjoyed watching Ivan Mostolsky pitch this season, especially as a freshman, but they just didn't have that many guys that they could go to that are reliable, that they trusted early on, especially putting yourself in a hole. I mean, they lost all three in North Carolina, then they lost two in Jacksonville, and you're already kind of behind the ball. So, yeah, I guess they also, what Coach said, that they couldn't hit the ball well enough to use a bunch of different guys and see what they had. But I think all in all, they didn't exactly have that many great transfers. I know they tried to hit on the graduate guys that were from smaller schools or were hurt or something along those lines. Just yeah, I mean, I look at Connor Lynn. I'm kind of looking at the ERAs here. There was nobody under a four in the bullpen other than Ivan Mostolsky and Evan O'Neill, who pitched 6 times. But Connor Lynn pitched the two best games of the year, his two best, against probably Indiana's two best opponents they faced in the conference. Or sorry, that was in the midweek, but compared to the conference. And then I don't know if he pitched in the non-conference early in the year. I can't really remember much with that, but he has almost an 8 ERA, pitched his best 2 games against Louisville and Vanderbilt on the road. But then he comes in on the weekend, couldn't really put it all together. There were just a bunch of guys that did that. Regan Rivera was a big transfer, that could throw hard. He has over a 9 ERA. They couldn't piece it all together with a lot of these transfer guys. Michael Sarhat, Caden Jacoby. They had Ian White, who I thought would be like productive in the bullpen. He only pitched, I think, one time maybe. Yeah, I think what they had configured with the roster in the offseason is definitely not what was put out once they got onto the field.
Yeah. Yeah, we wanted to see, and again, we talked a lot about this, about wanting to see more of the freshman pitchers. Now, Mostolski, as you said, that was the big bright spot of all of it, was the fact of what Mostolski produced. He had a little bit of an injury issue there at the end of the season. That's why we haven't seen him in a few weeks. But I don't think it's anything long. It's not a long-term issue. That was the real breath of fresh air. And I think what was interesting was the point they talked about. It was like, he wasn't the prospect of the group. He was the guy that was very successful in high school, the kind of the bulldog type. And that's, and maybe that's something they need to, you need more of those guys, more of those guys that they're not necessarily going to go and make a big name for themselves as a major league pitcher, but they're really good college guys. They have the potential to be really good college guys because they win, they can throw strikes, they can be consistent. And I'm not knocking the guys that have stuff because, to some degree, you understand typically guys that have stuff take longer to figure out how to use that stuff at this level to command it, when they're throwing with such high velocity and such high spin rates. Those things are hard to control. It's taken Brayton Thomas a while to get to the point where he can. The thing about Brayton Thomas, and I think he has been a bright spot, is that, and this is something Coach talked quite a bit about on Saturday's game, is that what Brayton Thomas has now done is gotten to the point where he can go into a game, not have a pitch, and find a way to get into the fifth inning. Which is something that he could not have done a couple months ago. And that's something that they've worked with him to be able to do. It's like, okay, well, the fastball's not working. Okay, go with the combination splitter slider. And he was able to make that work for a while. It finally they Illinois kind of figured it out there in the fifth. And then we went to Pete Haas. And so I'm hoping that this is something from, especially with, this is going to be the first time that that Matt Myers is going to be able to recruit in the portal. And he's not going to do a ton of high school recruiting that's going to impact next year, but he can definitely do portal recruiting. And it'll be interesting to see if his choices are a little bit different than Dustin Glant's were. I think Dustin Glant, he had a few of those amazing successes of taking guys that didn't have it all together and finding the pieces and making them successful. But the problem was, they didn't get enough of them. You got to have enough of them for this strategy in college baseball to work, because the problem is, it's about the depth. At some point, you can't win a series if you can't cover 27 innings. And
I look back that Maryland game, the final game of the series, where you're kind of out of pitching and you allow a walk-off grand slam. And then just a couple weeks later, when I went to the Northwestern series, that's kind of a game they gave away. And you get to Sunday and you're kind of out of the bullpen a bit. So you're at the real back half and those guys just haven't been trusted. And then we saw it all with the Purdue weekend. And that's where you don't find a way to win those first game or two, and that you're in a deep hole in the final game of the series, like not having won the previous day or the day before that, that it's just they didn't have enough guys. And I think you talk about college baseball and development all the time. Kellen English, before the season, I didn't know anything about this guy other than the fact that he wore the highest jersey number on the team at 55, and he was on the bottom of the roster,
and
and
he's
that he
very,
was
very tall.
6 foot 10 or 9, whatever it is. And he went out there the first time. I think it was a midweek game against Bradley, if I remember correctly. I was sitting there. I mean, I'm paying attention, but I'm kind of not. It's an 8-run game, and I see 96 miles per hour on the scoreboard. I'm like, wow, like, who is this guy? And then I went behind home plate. I filmed it. It was 96 on a fastball. Then he countered it with an 84 changeup or something on the next pitch. And I'm like, do we have something here? The guy finishes the year with a near 11 ERA, but that's not, it's a freshman in college baseball that's thrown into the fire. He's huge. He's not really like built for his body yet, maybe, especially with a new pitching coach. You get the pitch types going. Him, Kellen English, and Javi Carrera, who we saw 7 times this year. Kellen English, we saw 15. But Javi Carrera and Kellen English have to be like cornerstones of this development. These two guys are like legitimate pitchers if they can put it all together. And they need guys like that to have depth in the bullpen, which they just simply didn't have.
And I would also point out from this year, the loss of Bergman pretty early. That was an expected piece who was doing pretty well when he went down. And that could have been a decent inning eater that
Well,
I kind of needed.
I think more importantly, it's they kept having to move guys into a starting role, and at first, who was it? It was Rivera, and I think they may have been able to limit the really bad innings that Rivera had if he was exclusively a bullpen guy and like a middle reliever, where it's like, okay. Once you know he doesn't have it, then you go get him. to the point that I think that, the best in this decade, the best pitching year IU had was the all Big Ten season in 21. And part of that was the fact that they didn't have midweeks. They did have some 4-game weekends, but for the most part, they were playing like 3.5 games. And then there was also a lot of 7-inning games in that, too. So with all of that, they had an abundance of pitching. But it's like, you look at this, like maybe these weren't, I mean, they were good pitchers, but it wasn't like this massive step up. A big piece of it was that as soon as a guy showed any signs of not having it, he got pulled.
So that's
And then
it.
they put, and
That's
you put
it.
the next guy
Now,
in.
we've tried to get greedy a lot of times this year, and it's burnt us. Because you're explaining it. You could have a bunch of guys who would say 7 out of 10, right? Even if you don't have a 9 or a 10, maybe you have Tony, so you got one. You got a Seabold when he was hot, another one. But even if you have a bunch of 6s and 7s, you could fill a bullpen with that. You could fill a pitching staff with that. But we had guys that were like under 5, and unfortunately, we just didn't have the depth. I got on the offense a lot here early. I really did. I was frustrated. We didn't hit. We didn't score. We weren't clutch. But you know what? They figured it out by the end. And the major issue was not enough arms in the pen. And hopefully, maybe we like Mostowski, Zach brought up. Maybe we can catch a couple, young guys coming in next year between freshmen and portal, and just have more. We don't even need tens. Give me a bunch of sevens. This is college baseball. Everybody's going to need to pitch. We're talking about this tournament. Like, guys are going to play 5 games and 9. You got to have arms, and you got to have a circle of trust that you could say, okay, he might not be my most trusted, but I trust him now. I don't think we had very many, right? They say in the NBA, you start the playoffs, you trust 9 guys on the court, but by like the third round, you're playing 6, right? Because things change. So maybe they trusted more people to start the year, but by the end, there weren't very many left. I just hope maybe we'll have more depth, even if it's not high, 10, maybe a bunch of 6 sevens, and we can 6 sevens, and we can fill it up to just, have enough to be competitive, because this year was a competitive late game, especially coming down the
Yeah,
stretch.
Carl, you touched on it that Matt Myers hasn't had a full cycle, that these aren't his guys. And when you see the late 9-2 blown lead at Purdue, What more can he do out there if the guy's not going to throw a strike? Like, these are on the players, and that's why. Sure, I don't blame Matt Myers or Jeff Mercer in the moment that they blew the lead. It's their fault. I do think it goes back to the offseason where the roster configuration is there and you just don't have enough guys. So I don't think it's fair to really judge right now, especially the pitching staff, because you lost your pitching coach so late in the whole recruiting cycle and portal cycle that if next year this pitching staff goes the way it did this year and they have one or two reliable pitchers, then I think there's fair criticism across the board.
Now, I do think there needs to be a little bit more urgency, especially if, now, and this is an if, because we just don't know how the offseason is going to go. But if they can hold on to the bulk of this position player group, these guys need to start producing earlier in the season. And giving the pitching staff giving the flexibility of throwing a freshman or throwing a redshirt freshman, because there were several freshmen that we didn't see at all this year. I know the whole redshirt thing is probably going away, but for this group, it'll still be another year where you're going to have guys that we didn't see at all this year because of injury or whatever it was. Hey, we can throw this person out here and try to get three outs with them. Because we trust that the offense is going to produce enough runs that we can absorb 1 2-run inning if we happen to give that up. And it's just the last few years, the offense has always seemed to be a little late to the party. I mean, there have been good, I mean, heck, even 2014, the offense was late to the party, but it was way late this year. I think it's important that they get this figured out a little bit earlier.
And I do wonder a little bit. I try not to put too much faith into things like sophomore slump at the plate, but I do wonder if there was a little bit of that on the offensive side of more scouting video out on all of these now sophomores
Yeah.
this year and.
Well, that's true. And now I will say this, Denny, his progression was pretty
Has been
consistent for both seasons. Because he
I
was,
would agree
I
with
mean, he
that.
was, let's be honest, Denny did not hit well at all coming out of the gate his freshman year.
No.
And they were thinking he was going to be the best hitter on the team.
Yeah.
And he
And he
lost
showed why this year.
his starting job and then had to fight to get his starting job back and then became who we see now. He was better. Jake Hanley was a bit better out of the gate last year. I mean, he was getting hits all the time. Now for his power came a little bit earlier this year. And overall, his years were pretty comparable. I mean, he was getting hits at a rapid clip there at the end. Hanley was just doing was doing fantastic here in the month of May. Koski, I didn't
Koski got
really
off.
develop into who we know until recently, and he's been phenomenal lately. So the
When
hope
your
is,
name is up there with Alex Dickerson.
yeah, but the hope now is that they'll have that, and they'll also, I mean, it's just like if. I think they were expecting more out of TJ Skyler's bat than what they got out of it. I mean, he did better his freshman, his sophomore year than he did his junior year. So that's another one. And it's just they got to avoid that. Have and in each of the last few years they've had this. They've had a guy who, it was Jason Oliver last year who, played a month and was just a hole in the lineup. And that's a big problem because you get into these early season games where you need a big inning and you just get to that automatic out and it's painful. To his credit, TJ was a little bit better in the second half with the bat. He laid out laid he also laid out a really good bunt this weekend. So,
And he's just so strong behind the plate.
oh, he's an amazing catcher.
I was just about to say, I think even in a season like this, there's so many things that arise from misfortunes that, like, one of them is TJ Skyler hitting 075 on the season. that him struggling at the plate allows you to get Braden Ricketts in there and play catcher, which opens up a spot for Owen Tanuver to hit in his freshman year. Caleb Koski plays the outfield because he can't pitch this year because his elbow's shot. Like, there's some of these things happen that I think another one, Hayden Stewart was the starting second baseman. You have Landon Fry's freshman year. He's almost hitting 300 at the end of the season. Now he has experience under his belt. He played in these big games that over time, like a year like this, it pays off into something bigger. So, yeah, I just mentioned the misfortunes come into something positive.
Well, I mean, just recently, Cooper Malamazian gets hurt, and that forces Moore to go to short, Hogan, and then you get Cal Gates out into the outfield, and he has the week he's had.
I was about to say we get to learn that Hogan Denny can play wherever the heck he wants to play.
I'm sorry, that was just, I mean, I know we've already talked about it, but I asked Coach about it, negative, and that was like genuine from Coach, and he was like, I had no idea he could do
He
that.
must be control press. I mean, he's legit. He really could play it. He was not like Gary Carter out there playing it in the eighth inning because it was four ejections in Houston. I mean, this guy legitimately played. That did happen once in the 80s. But he legitimately knew what to do, his footwork, the whole bit, bare hands, everything. He was
But I
great.
mean, going into the season, we didn't think he was going to be that great an outfielder. But that arm he's got out and right, it's just wow.
It's
And
insane.
then
Missile.
he's not TJ Skyler behind the plate, but he's still pretty darn good
He's,
behind the plate. And
yeah.
he can throw
Real good
people out.
framing. Real good.
Yeah. I mean, it's just you look at it, it's just like the versatility there is just amazing.
By the
Yeah,
way,
there's stuff to look forward to, definitely.
Hogan Denny got engaged today. Just want to throw that
Oh,
out there.
congratulations.
Congratulations. Buddy,
That is
what a
awesome.
guy. Hogan Denny. Is it an IU girl, I hope?
I don't know. I assume he's been with her for a while. I assume she's an Indiana girl. I don't
Yeah.
know. I didn't
Might
look
not
much
be
into.
IU. You never know.
Yeah.
So
Still
you
can't
gotta do
beat.
more research.
Still can't
Zach's
beat
gotta
Bob
get a
Wells.
journalist. Um,
Ty Bob
yeah.
Wells was still the best for
That was a guy.
proposals.
Yeah.
That was a cool one.
Yeah, after winning a regional game, that's pretty cool.
Doesn't get much better.
All right. Well, this does conclude not only this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball, but the 2026 weekly season. We may pop up here and there if there's like any major news to happen, if we get this is going to be a really light draft year because you had most of the seniors are transfers, and we don't have a
The
lot of
starters
we hardly
are
have any juniors,
right.
period. So all of the you've got a couple guys who are technically draft eligible, but at this point we're not seeing a lot of draft buzz on it. So this is going to be probably a light draft year. We have no idea what to expect from the transfer portal. We don't know either incoming or going, other than I mean, you had Joe Celia, who was basically a bullpen catcher this year. He's who graduate who got it who did get a senior day recognition and graduation from IU is going to be moving on. And then Peter Doobie, the now Friday starter for Brown, and he actually had a good performance in the Ivy League tournament, will be coming to IU as a grad student. So that's going to be a nice pickup of someone who can be kind of an inning eater, maybe a Sunday or a midweek starter. That will be that's going to be, I think, a nice addition for IU. But so far, that's all we hear about because the portal for undergrads does not open until June 1st. So the month of June will be when the portal is open. If you go to iubase.com, there is a link to the transfer portal, and we will be keeping very close attention and updates on that. And as we kind of see how roster construction is going to work, because yeah, you just don't know what's out there from there's so many factors that go into where a guy lands, and these guys have options. So we will see how it all shakes out and how the team is constructed before we get to fall ball. So I want to thank all of our team especially Zach, because
Yes.
Zach came to us, and we'll at least have some of his services for his senior year. Even though it is Zach's draft year,
Yes. And
we do
hey,
have one very important junior here, so who's going to be a senior next year?
and he's making some big moves for next year too.
Yes.
Yes, I'll be covering football and basketball, and then obviously I'll stick with the baseball. 4 years, I'll be doing it here. I'm not entering the portal for that, so.
We appreciate that, Zach. Yeah, because we really don't have the NIL money. I'm sorry.
You should check his DMs, though. He's getting a lot of offers from the other Iowa baseball websites.
But yes, Josh Bennett keeps helping us on the back end. He's with two boys that are well into their baseball playing eras. He just does not have the time to join us weekly on the podcast, and we miss him. But he's still part of the group, and still part of our back end discussions. And as always, having Chris and Cass on this podcast is fantastic. So for all of those folks, we conclude an IU baseball season, but we will have fall ball before we know it, and we will see you at the BART.